Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with decorated Marine Corps veteran Bob Wynn of Monterey, California, where Hometown Heroes has aired every weekend for many years now on affiliate KION. The son of a World War II Marine, Bob saw intense combat as a Marine in Vietnam. He told us of the firefight that left him wounded and holding a dying Marine named Billy Johnson in his arms. Staff Sergeant Billy Johnson's name is one of more than 58,000 names etched on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C. And Bob knows his name could have very easily ended up there as well.
And what were the extent of your injuries? What happened to you that day?
Well, the other thing was that my radio man was as close to me as you are to me now, which is about 2 feet. And he took 3 machine gun rounds and a hand grenade. And all I got was one. I was just shot once in the leg. So they opened up on the two of us. I had laid the platoon down, and we were up looking, trying to creep up ahead of the platoon just a little bit to see if we could get to the top of the ridge line, and they were waiting for us in spider traps at the top. A spider trap opened up, and a hand grenade came out, like the old World War II potato masher, you know, with the tin can on a stick, came flying out. And I saw it coming, and at the exact same time, machine gun opened up on the two of us, and I went right, and he went left. I went into a B-52 crater, and he went into a fighting hole, I guess, and then I was able to get back to my platoon, and they found him 2 or 3 hours later. Another rifle company came down the ridge line and found him. And I show an interesting clip in the video that I use for my talk. I show an interesting clip of him describing that situation. I found it in the New York State Military Museum, and it's him describing that day and that situation. So he got shot up very badly and eventually sent back to the United States, and all I got was a leg wound. I was sent down to Da Nang for a couple of weeks and then rejoined my unit.
And you told us that that prepared you for the rest of what you were going to see, but at that moment you don't know the rest of what you're going to see, and you don't know when you're going to be back with your unit or anything like that. So when you did go back, how different was your perspective or your outlook or just your mentality?
Well, it just brings to life what you'd all been taught and trained, that war is chaotic and bad things are going to happen, and you just need to do the best you can with your training. You've been trained extremely well, but that does not necessarily dictate the outcome of firefights when you're shooting at each other from 15 or 20 feet. You don't have a lot of control at that point.
Well, and you know, you said that was the first, but it was definitely not the last. And, you know, I don't ask out of morbid curiosity or, you know, trying to get gratuitous stories out of you, but I'm sure there are some other incidents that, when you reflect on that time, are still intense memories for you. Is there anything else you care to share, things that you saw, did, or witnessed?
Well, about halfway through the tour, 13-month tour in the Marine Corps, about halfway through the tour, we went on to the 2nd Battalion, 26th Marines, was assigned to the 3rd Marine Division as his battalion landing team, which meant that we were supported by a squadron of helicopters, and supposedly we were supposed to be based off ships off in the China Sea. But in the 7 months left on my tour, we only saw the ships 3 times for about 48 hours each time. And so that battalion landing team was used by the 3rd Marine Division commander to basically pick us up and put a battalion, and my company, the Golf Company, was the company I was with most of the time, into places that had not been occupied for a while. And so that's a long way of saying that we were dropped into very inhospitable situations quite frequently. It turned out not to be the great shipboard duty going to the Philippines and Okinawa that we thought it was. It turned out to be pretty hostile time.
Yeah, most of us will never experience something like this. So it sounds like you're getting dropped into scenarios that there's no way to prepare for. You have no idea what to expect. You just have to be ready to react to anything that happens.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the helicopters would pick you up. Sometimes it was 3 times it was off a ship, which was exhilarating. You see those helicopters out there on an aircraft carrier with the rotors all, and you jump in these helicopters on heli teams, and they lift you off and take you into a jungle somewhere and drop you in the middle of nowhere. But most of the time, they just pick us up from one spot to another right where we were. And you never knew from one day to the next when the helicopters were coming to get you and when your job was over and where you were going next. You just got a new series of maps. We didn't have GPS or any of those things back in those days. Everything was maps and radio communications. And, you know, as a lieutenant I was a second lieutenant and a first lieutenant while I was there. I mean, you're the low man on the totem pole. You just go where they tell you to go and when they be ready to go. So, yeah, it was unpredictable, to say the least.
Yeah, can you give us some examples of some of the things you encountered in those unpredictable situations?
Well, some turned out to be a walk in the sun where nobody had been in for a while and they wanted to send a unit in there to see if there was any. And we were primarily fighting the NVA. Everything was a free fire zone. There were really no villages, no civilian population that we had to be concerned with. If bushes moved, you could shoot and ask questions later. So a number of the places that we went, it turned out to be nobody there and nothing to shoot at and nobody shooting at you. And other places, from the time the helicopters started into the landing zone, you were taking bullets through the fuselage of the helicopters, and you knew that it was going to be pretty chaotic. It was all pretty much in the mountainous areas along the DMZ, Kantian, Quezon, Camp Carroll. So it wasn't down in the rice paddy areas, and so a lot of the problems were line of sight. You really couldn't see very far, so you really never knew exactly what you were getting into. But I would say that there were probably 15 or 20 situations that where we went into hot landing zones. Sometimes you were the first unit in, first platoon in, sometimes you were the third platoon in, and you knew what you were getting into. If the radio calls came back that it was a hot LZ, if it was not, why, it was just kind of a 2 or 3 days walking around looking for somebody, and if they weren't there, they picked you up and took you someplace else.
I don't think a lot of people are envying that lieutenant in Vietnam as we're talking about it. And you talked about, you know, being prepared, and you felt very prepared, and then that first real close call prepared you for the rest. But I have to ask an obvious and maybe dumb question. Did you ever think you might not make it home? Did you ever feel that fear or terror that, hey, I'm not getting out of this?
I figured I probably wouldn't make it home. The lifespan of a second lieutenant making helicopter assaults into the jungle areas, they were not good. And as a result of that, I mean, I didn't know exactly where I was going to be when I got there. It's just the unit I got assigned to. But my wife and I had been high school sweethearts. We'd gone to different colleges. We'd been apart for 5 or 6 years. And then when I got commissioned and graduated from college, she wanted to get married. And I said, you know, I'm an infantry officer. I'm going right to Vietnam. And I would suggest that we not get married. Let's just wait until I get back. And if I'm still the person that you want to marry, then fine, we'll do that. And because the life expectancy of a person doing what I was doing, either living through it or coming back with all your arms and legs and, you know, fully capable of functioning, was not very good. And so I just went in with that mentality. As luck would have it, or as God would have it, because God was in control, we were married 10 days after I got back. And it did work out.
Yeah, and I hear in you sharing that there was, I don't know that I would call it a resignation, but definitely a view of reality, that this is the likely scenario, or these are what the odds say. But I also hear what I think is a confidence that you carried with you, or a strength to endure those situations. I mean, you said 15 or 20 hot landing zones that you got thrown into. What do you think it was that helped you handle those situations that, I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know if I could handle. I think a lot of people wouldn't have confidence they could handle. What was it that propelled or carried you?
Well, I don't mean this to sound boastful at all, but I was really good at what I did. In fact, I have said many, many times over through my second career, which was a business career, that I was never as good at anything in my work life as I was at that job. I mean, that's just what I was kind of raised to do, and that's what I was really good at. I wasn't confident. I mean, I knew that I knew what I was doing. I knew I was good at it, and I knew my troops would follow me. But it was just fate that allowed me to come home, because I can name the incident I just described where my radio man got all shot up and I only got one minor leg wound. And there were multiple situations like that where, I mean, I just barely missed a bullet by just inches, and I can't explain it.
And were there other occasions where you were wounded, or just that first time?
No, that was the only time.
And what do you do with that if you've had so many close calls that you lose count. Does that have an impact on how you live the next day or the next year or the next decade of your life?
Well, yeah, I've become very fatalistic. Pretty soon you begin to think, well, it's my time. If it's my time, it's my time. And God will know that. He's in control of that. I'm not. And I've had a number of kind of unusual circumstances over the last 30 or 40 years where I was supposed to be on an airplane, and I changed my flight reservations at the last minute, and the airplane crashed, and everybody was killed, and I was not on it. But the friend that I was on a business trip with was on it. He took the flight. I changed it. And so that's just one of those fatalistic things. And if it's your time, it's your time, and there are things you control and some things you don't. And in combat, you don't control everything.
And I don't want to leave out anything else from your time there that you think is important. So feel free to insert that. But, you know, you mentioned getting married very soon after you came home. Do you remember what it was like to leave Vietnam, to come back to the States? Was that cause for celebration? Did you have mixed feelings? What was that like?
No, I was really excited. I mean, we used to call it going back to the world, because back in those days, you were totally disconnected from the world. Half of the letters that my fiance would write to me, I would get. She would get just half of mine. We had no radio contact. The only time I saw her, my parents were in Hawaii. So I went at 11 months, I went to Hawaii on R&R. She flew over there. My fiance flew over there and stayed with them until I arrived. And so we were able to plan the wedding. And then I had to go back for 60 more days. And so I was walking on eggs those next 60 days because we had planned. She was planning the wedding. I was just trying to figure out who was going to be my groomsman and my in the wedding. But when I came back, fortunately, I've never suffered from PTSD, and that's why I have started giving this talk about PTSD, because I never experienced it, but so many people did, and I've had a lot of people ask me why, and I would tell them just because I think I was well prepared for the experience that I was going to go through, and a lot of people just aren't. So when I got back, I actually ended up going into the unit that I was scheduled to go to when I first graduated from the basic school, and that was a force recon unit, which is kind of the Navy SEALs of the Marine Corps, if you want to call it that. And so life was good. I mean, I was doing all the fun things that you do in that unit, a very small specialized unit, doing all the and nobody was shooting at me. And we were in Camp Pendleton, which is on the coast of Southern California. I was married. 10 months later, she got pregnant. And so I just kind of put it behind me, moved on. Life was good.
And you made reference to a talk that you give, and that the fact that you didn't suffer from PTSD is why you're doing something to try to help those who are. What's the origin of that? And maybe you can give us a nutshell version of what that talk consists of.
I always knew about PTSD, but, you know, I kind of had the attitude, unfortunately, and I regret it now, but I had the attitude like, look, we all went through the same experiences in Vietnam. You came back to the world. You're safe. Maybe you have some physical or problems, but mentally, you know, you made it. Get over it. Move on. I mean, life, people did that in all the wars before us, right? Just move on. And if you stay in the service, fine. If you don't, get out and make your career whatever it's going to be, and make your family life whatever it's going to be, and don't live in the past of that traumatized 12 or 13 months that we all went through. And later, probably about 7 or 8 years ago, I was asked by a friend of my son-in-law's up in Seattle. I came across the street and asked me if I had ever read the book Matterhorn, which was written by an individual that had served as a Marine Corps rifle platoon commander in Vietnam just about 6 months after me. I mean, he got there about 6 months after, so we overlapped. And I said, no, I really never have. He said, well, it's a fictional book written about a Marine Corps rifle platoon commander in Vietnam. I would be interested in you reading that book. And then when you next come up and visit your daughter and son-in-law in Seattle, I'd like to know what you think of it. How realistic is it? Because it seems like to me, him never having been in the military, it's very realistic. So I did. I read it. And it turns out the guy who wrote it, it was a New York Times bestseller. I had never heard of it, but I didn't read a lot of military stuff anyway, so I'm not surprised. But it was a New York Times bestseller written by a fellow who ended up living about 20 minutes away from my kids in Seattle. And so I read the book, and I figured maybe I could find this guy because we were in a lot of the same places. He mentions a lot of the same fire bases and things that I was at. The Matterhorn is a fictional place, but all the surrounding places in the cover of the book are real life places. So I went on a search for him, eventually found him, and he returned my call, and we've since become really good friends. We agreed to have lunch. When we had lunch, he asked if I had read his second book called What It's Like to Go to War. I said I hadn't. He said, well, I'd be interested in you reading that book. He said it's a lot easier to read and a lot shorter. And it's a book that he had written about what it is like to be in intense combat, the kind of combat where you're in firefights shooting at one another from 15 or 20 feet. That kind of combat, not in a combat zone necessarily on a big base, but actually in really close combat. And so I read the book and then went back and had lunch with him, and turns out he'd suffered dramatically from PTSD when he came back. Multiple Purple Hearts, Navy Cross winner, highly celebrated, decorated Marine lieutenant. Went to Yale, got a Rhodes Scholarship, dropped out of Oxford to join the Marine Corps and go to Vietnam. So he's quite an accomplished guy. But so as we got talking over several lunches over the next year, he had testified before Congress about PTSD and veterans' benefits for PTSD and recognizing it. And I guess I got the guilt complex that I had never really taken up the cause, even though I'd been in the same experiences that he had. I'd never suffered from it, so I'd never taken up the cause. And it just sort of got me thinking that I'm retired. I have the time. This is a way that I can give back, because so many people, some from Vietnam, obviously, but we're getting to be the older generation now. There's not, but so many in the recent wars, starting in the 90 wars, the Gulf Wars, through the withdrawal from Afghanistan and Iraq, which is almost 20 or 30 years of war, are suffering from PTSD for a lot of different reasons. Those wars are so much different than the one that we experienced. Multiple deployments, constant communication with your family back home on computers and cell phones, and multiple tours, and yet similar in ways that they're wars you're not necessarily going to win. We pulled out of most of those wars without winning them, and most of those places we were left in chaos, and it leaves these people without arms and legs and with nightmares. And while I'm not medically prepared to deal with them, I am able to explain to their wives and fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters why they are the way they are. And so that's the crux of what I try to do, is explain to people why their sons and daughters, and now it's daughters just as much as it is sons and daughters, come back so traumatized by the experiences of war.
It's time for our final break. The author that Bob was referring to, as you may have figured out, is Carl Marlantis. I have links to his books about Vietnam for you at hometownheroesradio.com, but there's more to come with this Marine Corps veteran, Bob Nguyen, including the life-saving gift he was able to share with another Marine, his World War II veteran father. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.